Welcome to Nightlife, bite-sized travel.
Well, if there's anything this pandemic has done, it's made us appreciate our own backyard, both literally and figuratively. In Monday Night Travel tonight, we're off to Uluru. Next month will mark 36 years since the Uluru Kardajuta National Park was formally handed back to its traditional owners. Climbing the rock is now banned, which has resulted in rangers being able to focus more on park management. Joining us now is Quentin Long, co-founder of the website australiantraveller.com. Quentin, good evening. Welcome to Nightlife.
Oh, good day, Phil. Good evening. Good to be with you. Yeah, no, great good day to everybody else out there.
Yes, well, exactly. You've been to Uluru, I think, at least five times. You say it's like a new holiday every time.
Mm. I mean, yeah, and I have a very strange relationship with Uluru. I have been lucky enough to go five times, and every time it's different. But I also have this sense, you know, you step off the plane and then you see Uluru in the distance when you fly directly into Uluru. And I have this weird feeling that I just have to go up and put my hand on Uluru just to say I'm here. Mm-hmm. And then I feel like everything's all good. And so, to me, it's without getting too, you know, hippy-dippy tree-hugging, but to me it's very much a Mother Earth relationship, and it's very female to me. Like, I think of Uluru as she.
Yeah.
And other people have had the same experience. Like, there's a guy called Bruce Munro who did the Field of Light, and he actually came to Uluru when he was a backpacker, and he describes it as feeling like electricity was coming up through the ground, up through his legs, and out of him, and that's what inspired him to create his signature artworks, which is gardens full of light. Mm. And then he was telling this story actually to ABC one day, and the general manager of the Uluru Resort, Ayers Rock Resort, heard it and then contacted him, and that is actually how Field of Light now comes to be. Out there at Uluru, he went away and he created all these gardens of light all around the world. The first time was in his own back garden back in the UK, because he's British. And then from that moment on, they said, well, you've been inspired by Uluru, but you've never actually done it. Why don't you come back and do it? And that's where it all came from.
So what actually is it? What is the Field of Light?
So the Field of Light is the best way I've heard it described, it's not mine, I've got to be fair and say it's someone else, but it's as if you're walking through a dot painting. Mm. And it is a bunch of bulbs. I think there's about 200,000 bulbs or 100,000 bulbs, maybe 50,000, maybe I'm exaggerating, but a lot in the tens of thousands of bulbs that are full of, that are all light and they're lit up. And they change colour. And they do look like daisies almost swaying in the breeze. And that's why, and they're all laid out in front of Uluru.
Right.
And you walk amongst them. And it's a great thing to do. Bruce actually designed it for sunrise, not sunset, but most people do it at sunset. And it is just a very wondrous additional feel.
Okay. I know what you mean about that, the feeling of the place. That I've been there a few times, and it's impossible to describe the delicacy of what you're of what you're seeing, isn't it? It's extraordinarily delicate. I can understand what you mean by thinking of it as female too, in a way.
Yeah.
When's the best time of the year to go?
Well, the classic time to go is in the sort of winter for us, which is when it's coolest during the day. But, you know, you can go at any time of year. You just got to be prepared for the conditions. And so it'll be pretty hot over Christmas, but you can still do it. And the beauty of the guys that are now running it is that they try to keep as much open as possible so that you can actually engage with it. The thing like the over at Kardajuta, which some people prefer Kardajuta to Uluru itself, but it's a real personal taste thing. And Kardajuta obviously is what we used to be called, the Olgas. And there's a fantastic walk called the Valley of the Winds walk, which is about 7 kilometres long.
Yeah,
but amazing. You cannot do it in the middle of summer. It's just too hot. And so there's the sort of trade-off between the two. There's a lot less crowds when you go in the middle of summer, but there is a trade-off with the heat.
Mm. When people talk about Uluru versus, you know, the Red Centre or Alice Springs. Alice is, of course, a few hundred k's away, isn't it?
That's right.
What are they talking about? Most people probably are thinking of Uluru, aren't they? But there are, of course, there are other things. When people talk about the Red Centre, what are they talking about?
Yeah, so the Red Centre is a catch-all phrase for the Alice to Uluru area. And often it gets confused. And we've even, you know, still Australians turn up at Alice Springs Airport and go, so where's the rock?
So where's the rock? That's right.
Yeah, it's like, that'll be a six-hour drive that way. And so you've got to be really careful. But for me personally, I think the best way to really to do the Red Centre, I suppose, for want of a better term, is actually you fly into Alice and then you drive to Uluru via the West Mac Ranges and then Kings Canyon and that whole Marini Loop Road, because it gives you a sense of the landscape. It gives you a sense of just the vastness of the place. I call it, you get your outback eyes. You know, it takes you a day or so to really tune into the landscape and start to see it. You know, just, you know, the West Mac Ranges, which are literally, you know, Alice Springs is at the very juncture of the West MacDonald Ranges and the East MacDonald Ranges. And out through the West MacDonald Ranges, which is where that really great Larapinta Trail goes, which is a fantastic walking trail over the West Macs. And there's gorges all the way along that highway that you can duck into. And again, you've got to take the time to get your sensibilities around you because it is so vast. And it sort of grows on you. And then you go into a place like Hermannsburg where you see all the missionaries that Albert Namatjira came from. And then you start to get a sense of that history. And then you get into places like Kings Canyon, which is just vast and a just amazing sort of walk up and again gives you that sense of scale and sense of landscape. And so it's like a pilgrimage, you know, over 3 or 5 days from Alice till you arrive at Uluru. And you do get that spiritual sense through that journey, and you do get a greater appreciation for what it's like out there. And it does really speak to you. And you know, every step along that way, you find a difference and you find something new to appreciate, which is really part of the whole experience.
Yeah, exactly. I remember driving out there once about the back of Kings Canyon, and we were suddenly engulfed in a great herd of wild camels.
That's just part of the rich tapestry. Which,
I know, they came streaming across the road, surrounding the car, and, you know, it was quite something.
There's quite a few, actually. Every time I go to Uluru, the 5 times I've been there, I think 4 times I've seen some wild camel hanging around moseying around. And the other thing that I think is interesting, you know, particularly if we're speaking to people who have already been, Phil, is that it has changed a lot. And one of the big seminal moments, I think, was when it was taken over by the Indigenous Land Corporation, which really added a great flavour of Indigenous integration into the experience, and that really became a major central point of it. And also, as you alluded to in the introduction, that they did close the climb in 2019 on the exact day that was actually handed over. I think it was October 26 or something like that. And so that's been a really – what they've done in around that is they've added on a bunch of experiences, and particularly the new art centre that they've opened up is very, very special.
I'm glad in a way, because whatever you thought of the merits of the climb, it did disfigure Uluru, didn't it? It made a dirty big great stain up the side of the rock, which was unfortunate, I thought.
Yeah, it was. And it's also very dangerous.
Yeah.
You know, 35 from memory people died climbing Uluru, and for the Indigenous people that was really hard. That was the one thing that I think that they had the biggest problem with, was people dying up on their you know, sacred thing. And I love the Indigenous. I spoke to a guy once. He said, you know, I don't get it. Which is, there's no food up there. There's no water up there. Why are you going up there? And I love that description. You know. And I think that's part of the whole mystique of the place.
Still, that's right. And it is best appreciated, well, I thought anyway, I don't know what you think, Quentin, by you can, of course, you can go up and walk up to it and touch it. And
oh, gotcha.
You can, and wandering closely around the base of it is an amazing thing. It doesn't take that long to walk around.
No, it's only about 3 Ks around.
Yeah.
So, you know, a good hour's stroll. It's good to have a guide to point out the different sites and all the stories. And the other thing that I do like about it is it is a bit getting the scale from the base and looking up at certain parts of that base walk really helps you appreciate it and really helps you sort of feel that sense of humility you get from such a huge piece of nature, which is part of the experience.
Yeah. Yes, that's right. And then, of course, Carterjuta, which is nearby, actually, isn't it? You need a car to drive over there, but
yes.
That's definitely worth seeing. And many people think that's a more, deeply emotional. It's hard to describe this, but it is. People feel and report quite strong emotions in being in and around these places because they really are quite awe-inspiring.
Yeah. I think it's the scale of them. You feel like it's just, you're just in this flat, arid, landscape with the odd shrub and bush and sand dune. And then you have these enormous structures and you just look at them and go, that's just, that's phenomenal.
It's totally improbable in lots of ways too. There's the other thing, I mean, there's plenty to do actually, aren't there, of a normal sort of tourist type of thing, apart from seeing the formations, Carterjuta and Uluru. You've mentioned Bruce Munro's Field of Light. Well, there's plenty of other things. I mean, you can skydive. you can jump on a Harley Davidson, you can go camel riding, you can do lots of things, can't you?
That's right. And they've now introduced a whole series of sort of educational experiences at the new Art Centre where you can actually take part with the local Indigenous people on understanding the art and having a crack at it yourself. And it's not done in a touristy way. It's really done in a sharing of knowledge and sharing of understanding. And by doing, do you appreciate, just what skill and it takes to create this art and what the meanings are behind it. And I think that's what they've worked really, really hard. Like there's even now a bush tucker experience out there where they start to explain to you the bush tucker. They hold events out there as well with all the sort of different foods, and so once a quarter they usually put on a bush tucker experience that's more like a dining experience. They've also expanded. There used to be a thing called Sounds of Silence, which was a great dinner out on one of the sand dunes. You went out there, had a pre-dinner drink as the sun set, and then you sat down and you'd have dinner from a bay marine, and it was pretty decent. And then they'd have the astrologists astronomers I should call them come out and do an interpretation of the sky for you. And again, in terms of humbling experiences, that added to the idea because you had this beautiful, unpolluted night sky that was just rich with stars. And then you had people explaining them to you. And then giving you both sort of the Western and Indigenous interpretation of some of those stars, which was a really good way to do it as well. They've now upped that game where Tully Wiru, which is an even higher level luxury experience, which is it's not exactly cheap, but it really is the food. But you sit on a top of a sand dune and have dinner there, and it's more, waiters come and serve you as opposed to Bay Marais style. So they've added to that as well. And all sorts of things, day trips you can do. You can do helicopters out of Uluru as well now, which is part of the whole crazy stuff you can do.
Plenty of places to stay, actually, as I remember. Aren't there, Quentin? You can stay luxury. Sales are still operating, isn't it?
Sales is still going. At the moment, they've got 3.5 of their properties open because obviously times are tough. But yeah, the Sales, which is the 5-star hotel, there's a place called Longitude 131, which is really upmarket. It's one of the luxury lodges of Australia, and I was lucky to stay there on my honeymoon. It's that kind of destination, very special occasion, and different to the rest of the sort of accommodation that's in that resort area. You can camp there, and then they've got sort of 3-star motel hotel, almost backpackery style accommodation as well, and then a sort of self-catering apartments you can do, which are about 4-star. And some people even actually stay out at Curtin Springs just to keep the price really down, which is much more rustic than anything you'd get out at the Ayers Rock resort area. But there are a few options, and obviously camping, as I mentioned before, you can do. It's actually not too bad. It's It's greener than you would think. Anyway, let me.
Oh yeah,
that
it's
way.
Much greener. It actually is. It is greener than you'd think. Yeah, that's right. Which is true of lots of Central Australia. Okay, Quentin, if you haven't been to Uluru and Kadajuta, you should make it. You should put it on your list.
Yeah, thanks.
Good on you. Thanks, Quentin.
Thanks, Bill. You have a great evening, everybody.
You've been listening to a Nightlife podcast. For more great conversations about the issues that impact you, as well as features on travel and food, head to the Nightlife webpage. You'll find it at abc.net.au/nightlife. You don't need to be a night owl to enjoy the nightlife.